I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with two amazing filmmakers, James Martin and Babacar Njie. These are the winners of, or two of the winners of, Wonder Root's generally local, mostly independent film series, and I want to welcome them into the conversation. James, Babacar, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us here. Glad to be here.
Let's start from the beginning. James, your film, The New Orleans Sazerac, won the Audience Choice, and Babacar, your film, More Than Music Senegal, won the Wonder Film or the Wonder Root Film Award for the screening. Let's talk about you all's background in film and maybe how you got to this point. So, Babacar, you first. When did you first know that filmmaking was what you wanted to do?
I've always been in love with film, and I always knew that, you know, it was something that I was going to be working with, but I didn't know exactly how until about 5 years ago. I was, you know, I graduated from UGA in 04. And no, I'm sorry, in 08. And I was working, you know, in a field. I graduated in international affairs. And I loved what I was doing. And I was doing some really interesting work. But at the same time, I just wanted to do something that I was really happy to, like, get up every morning and, like, could brag about and be proud to do, you know, and just something fulfilling. So I quit what I was doing and I, you know, just found a way to do a film to get a good enough portfolio to enroll in film school, and enrolled in Georgia State, and, you know, that's what I've been doing for the past 5 years.
James?
I've always been into art. Art has always sort of been a backdrop to everything that I'm approaching, and so I knew I wanted to do something in that field, and, you know, the horror stories growing up is that you can never really make it as an artist, you know, because you have the family and the friends that are not doing that, and maybe they are trying to sort of give you a little bit of realism with things. And so I kind of ignored what they were saying. And at the same time, wanted to do something that allowed me to be creative in a way that could tell stories. And so I actually went to school for graphic design. And while there, I took a couple of digital arts classes, which introduced me to video art and film on that side, especially with editing and storytelling. And then ended up going to Florence for a semester and created a promotional video for the school that I was going to. So it allowed me to sort of dive into this documentarian mindset of being able to interview the teachers and the students and, you know, people that live in the city, and then bring that all together as a cohesive story with editing and title cards, which brought that graphic design back into it. So fast forward a couple of years, I moved to Atlanta to open a design studio here and met a couple of really awesome ladies. And together we decided to create a documentary about creativity of the South and what brought people here and what kept them here. And so we decided to open that discussion up to anybody who we thought was creative. And I think there's a lot of overlap with a project that Babacar is working on now, in that you are... if you're a chef or a musician or a painter, you're still really creative and you still have this really interesting outlook. And so we really wanted to get to the bottom of what brought people here as opposed to wanting to go to New York or Chicago or whatever else. And so then, you know, over the years since then, I've been able to work on a couple of narrative short films with my girlfriend, writer-director Jen West. And then recently dove back into the documentary side and created The New Orleans Sazerac.
Both of your films, The New Orleans Sazerac and More Than Music Senegal, are works that reflect a certain slice of the culture of those places. And I think that that's the one common thread that I see with both of your projects. So, Babacar, you first, but James, I want to get your thoughts on this as well. What personal connection did you feel? What personal connection did you feel to the location that your project was based in, mm-hmm. or based or focused on, I should say.
Well, I was really tied to it. First of all, my father is from Senegal, West Africa, so I had that tie from the beginning. But also, you know, one of the reasons why I made the movie was, you know, growing up, my father being from Senegal and my mother from Chicago, from America, is like growing up in two cultures, you know, and you sort of want to explore all parts of your culture. So it was just really something about wanting to explore my culture and also put out good images about, like, Africa. Because, you know, growing up, whenever I was a kid, I didn't see, like, good images of Africa on television. I experienced them, you know, firsthand. But on television, I always saw, you know, war, famine, you know, need for, you know, outside aid from other countries, you know. But growing up, I didn't experience that when I went out there. So I just wanted to, you know, sort of try to own these images and put out some images from my experiences. So that was like a cultural tie to the place.
James?
Well, I mean, New Orleans is a pretty crazy city. It's got a lot of mystique to it. It's got a lot of intrigue, because those that visit it can kind of get lost in the history and the madness sometimes. There are certain areas in New Orleans, in the French Quarter especially, that a lot of people go to and they don't really understand what's happened there or sort of what the backstory is. And so this drink allowed me to dive a little bit deeper into learning more about the history that happened on those streets that everyone else is sort of stumbling through. And also it just allowed me to connect the city with a cocktail that I've enjoyed over time. But also dive deeper into learning more about the ingredients that are in them. And what makes the drink so fascinating is that it's one of the few cocktails where every ingredient that's in the drink was made within 2 miles of New Orleans, including the sugar. So you've got the Domino sugar plant that's been there forever that provided the sugar to bartenders to use in their drinks. And I mean, it was all about being resourceful then. And so even though they might have had to import the brandy or the cognac or the whiskey a little bit, everything else was created right there. And so you just got a lot of historical figures that overlap in the telling of the story that I thought was really fascinating.
Now, James, you talk about the historical element that is present in the story of the Sazerac. How did you all go about doing the research and digging and digging and digging to make sure that you had the best version of the truth?
Right. Yeah, what makes the Sazerac so interesting is that a lot of people claim different stories. I mean, it has some folklore behind it, and some of which isn't necessarily this written history. A lot of it was oral, told through bartenders over generations. And so when we were talking to certain people, they felt it correct to know, to, you know, state their story, even though there's evidence to state otherwise. It's just sort of part of that process. So anyway, what we did in terms of diving into that story is we knew that other folks had researched the drink a ton and had written about it. And so we took all of the pieces, all of the written pieces that we could find, and tried to put them in a linear story and to see where those hiccups took place. And then when we were able to set up those interviews, we focused on those hiccups, and we were just trying to get to the bottom of it. Like, why would this company state that in this year, you know, this happened? Meanwhile, in this historical text or this recipe book, it states otherwise. And usually it's for marketing purposes. You know, one company wants to be able to sell their product and they want a nice, easy story that makes sense. And meanwhile, there maybe was a little bit more chaos and collusion and things happening in the beginning that made things happen a certain way. So.
Well, New Orleans is a place that has plenty of stories, so it probably is fitting that the Sazerac has several different versions of how it came to be. Ballpark figure, if you can give one, as far as the different versions or how many different versions of the Sazerac are there, how many are we talking?
Okay, so it's pretty much there are a lot because the drink. So let me just break it down. The drink is a super simple cocktail. It's got Peychaud's bitters, which are the bitters made by this guy, Antoine Peychaud, from New Orleans. It's like a really red, vibrant color bitter. It's got a sugar of some sort. It's got American rye whiskey, and it has absinthe. But with all of those ingredients, there are variations. So you could have the bitters sort of stay the same, but people can add additional bitters on top. The sugar can be like a cane syrup. It could be a demerara. It could be sugar cube, muddled. It could be a simple syrup. The ratios could change drastically, making it taste differently. The Sazerac started, it was sort of inspired by this brandy cocktail. So a lot of bartenders will throw brandy or cognac in with the rye whiskey. Depending on that ratio, it changes. And then also, absinthe was banned for a long time in the U.S. So they had to create a product that was like absinthe, but didn't have the wormwood in it that people were afraid of. So Herb Saint was created, and that was a product created in New Orleans right after Prohibition. And so based on what the bartender is inspired by, if they want to try to do a sort of throwback to the brandy cocktail and try to keep it realistic with the real absinthe, then that's one version. Or, you know, a lot of these new bartenders, they're trying to be creative, and they might do some weird infusions and things like that to try to take it a little bit further than what it once was. It's one of those weird cocktails where you can go to five different bars and have it five different ways, but you still feel comfortable calling it a Sazerac. It's not like you're calling it like a, you know, a riff on the Sazerac. People are still like, okay, yeah, it was a Sazerac because these were the ingredients they used. And so, I mean, I think the number is just limitless in that regard, you know?
Okay. All right. Lots of variations on a theme there. Mm-hmm. Now, Babacar, your film, More Than Music, Senegal, I think for viewers of that project, what is most obvious is the prominence of hip-hop culture and how the culture has maybe taken on a different ideology in Senegal than maybe it does here in the U.S. So could you give some background to that?
Just More Than Music is just really exploring, you know, the culture of hip hop in Senegal, where, you know, so many positive things are being done right now. The short that I showed at the festival, it mainly focuses on the aspect of, you know, the election that happened in 2012 in Senegal, where Abdoulaye Wade, who was the president at the time, was trying to amend the constitution to give himself a third term. And also some stuff after that, like trying to make his son president, make his son succeed him. Just basically, they weren't making moves that weren't legal, or trying to make moves that weren't legal. A group of rappers and journalists got together to create a movement where basically they shined a light on that. They called themselves like watchdogs or sentinels of democracy. And, you know, they basically made songs about it, got it out into the public, found out what people needed in the neighborhoods, and mobilized about 500,000 youth to vote in that election and got that guy out. And, you know, it was just major for hip hop and democracy and just overall a huge move for Africa, because this was coming hot off the heels of like all the Arab summers and the Arab protests. It was just something major. And, you know, and in addition, you know, they have news programs where they're wrapping the news for the week every week in two languages, Wolof and French, you know, all through hip hop. They're putting together lesson plans in math and history through hip hop. The rappers put all the money back in the community and buy like community centers like Boys and Girls Clubs, where they not only, you know, everybody's allowed to come and use all the equipment and everything, but the rappers have offices where they're reachable, you know, by the community. So when anybody has a grievance and, you know, the rappers are the voice of the community out there, they can pass that on. So just some great things happening out there. And it happens here too, but the mainstream over here sort of has a different message. But I think it's cool how, like, you know, hip-hop has African influence. So, you know, the influence of Africa comes overseas to make hip-hop. Then this hip-hop influence goes back to Africa to, you know, influence their social activism, you know. And I think, you know, it's a circle that keeps on going, because I feel like what's going on over there is going to come back here and have the hip-hop here influenced by that, you know. So I'm just hoping that that cycle just keeps on going.
What factors do you think are present in Senegal, or at least in Senegalese culture, mm-hmm. that enabled hip hop to be embraced throughout the community in a way that would infuse news broadcasts, that mm-hmm. would infuse sort of this community building? What do you think is present in that local culture mm-hmm. that would enable that?
Well, I think a couple things. One is that, like, Senegal is a melting pot, you know, from a lot of cultures. It's on the west coast of Africa, so a lot of flights that happen, you know, Senegal is like a stopover point. You're going to Johannesburg, you're stopping in Senegal. You're going to Europe, stopping in Senegal. Going to New York, you're stopping in Senegal. So it's a big melting pot, and a lot of culture mixes there. Also, it's like a really artistic place. They put a lot of, you know, lot of stock into, like, storytelling culture, you know, oral history, art, and there people really see the value in that. So that helps. And also, it's a community-based culture, too. You know, out in the United States, they say we have more of an individual culture. Well, out there, it's more of a community base, whereas anything you do represents on your community. So if you're out there in the newest car, you know, like flashing money, you're not doing anything for the community. So they're not going to be listening to your music and, like, you know, promoting your music. So I think that community element really, like, makes everybody band together. When somebody does something big, they feel like it's not only something big for them and their family, but something big for their community. And they take a lot of pride in that, and they try to bring everything back to their community, you know, because their whole name is attached to it just because of that society. So I think the community-based society really is something that helps drive home, like, the way you can use art to teach and to, like, make changes, and also the responsibility artists have.
They also talked about some of the earliest influences from American hip-hop on their local culture. They talked about Public Enemy, but even they referenced some of the more recent artists like Lil Wayne and Wiz Khalifa. Mm-hmm. So given how strong the local culture is, how do they juxtapose, based on your experience, mm-hmm. how do they juxtapose what's happening locally with what they're seeing through the media from the U.S. or other places?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's a slippery slope, just because the U.S. mainstream media is like, people get bombarded by that. We are so globalized, you know, we're such a globalized society that any of these people can pick up their cell phones and tune into YouTube, and they're seeing more American hip hop than they see on their broadcast on their TV and even on the broadcast. Like, I watch Senegalese TV, their channels out there that are dedicated to just, like, foreign hip hop, and, you know, a lot of that's American because a lot of that is where it's coming and originated from. So, I mean, a lot of the youth have sort of picked up on the new trends in hip hop, and just the same as America, you know, people are saturated by it, so they start moving towards what they're saturated by. But a lot of the pioneers of hip hop out there are, and a lot of the older generation, they just really want to make sure, you know, being a community-based structure, it's not that much headbutting between the old generation and the new generation like there might be here, you know, where we have a lot. So they really work together, because the new generation knows they need, you know, the older and the pioneers to, like, put them on and to guide them and do the right way. So they really listen to it. And I'm not going to say that mainstream hip-hop does not exist out there, because it does. But even when it exists, they get along with the next generation, and the next generation is there to be like, okay, this is nice and all, but this isn't how we're living out here. So I just think it's definitely that community structure again and the respect for the generation above them. You know?
Now, James and Babacar, talk about the actual film festival experience and the process and what that was like for you. And maybe even talk more if you were involved in any other film festivals. Just maybe talk about the general process and experience of being in a film festival and what that was like.
Yeah, so with short films, it's interesting because your form of distribution typically is festivals. And so with our short narratives that we've done in the past, that's sort of been our way to get out there and showcase it and meet other filmmakers. And so when we made the New Orleans Sazerac, we had that same approach where we knew that we wanted to do the film festival circuit and tour it around and get as many people behind it as we could, because there's just something really interesting about learning about something that they may have heard of or may not have. But to know that this cocktail has been around for a couple hundred years, I think it's really fascinating that people who see it want to go out and order it at a bar in Atlanta or, you know, Chicago or wherever, even though it's from New Orleans. And so we premiered our film at the Oxford Film Festival a couple of months back. And then we've done a couple of more since. The Atlanta Film Festival is great because for us, it's home. And so we can bring all of our friends and family out to see our film and let them know what we've been working on, because we can't release it publicly. So it's sort of like, hey, like, you know that we've been working on this for the last year. Come take a look and support us. And then, you know, what makes it fun is that it creates an experience around the film. So with a lot of festivals, we've been able to serve the Sazerac during a screening or during an event during the festival. So folks that had seen the film or are about to see the film can actually try it and sip on the history as they're watching or as they're learning about it, which has been awesome. I just want to also say we're really excited. In a couple of weeks, we're going to the Cannes Film Festival with our film, and we're a part of the Emerging Filmmaker Showcase at the American Pavilion there. And so, same thing, they reached out to us and they're like, would you be interested in serving the Sazerac during the screening? And it's like, yeah, of course. Like, I'm glad that I didn't have to ask you guys to do that, because they're really fascinated by the story and they want people that are attending the festival to be able to try that too. So it's really awesome to be able to take this to Europe. We're stoked about that. It's gonna be great.
Babacar, your process or experience?
The experience, I think the festival experience is great. Especially, you know, as a filmmaker, I think like if you were, I sort of always liken it to if you were a musician, you'd go on tour. But if you're a filmmaker, you go to a festival, you know, it's like you put your films out and people can get them sometimes, you know, but that's your chance to actually meet the people who are going to watch your film and, you know, talk to people in your field, you know, the other people who are on tour, you know, and just really network and do a lot of, you know, a lot of networking and things that happen in the future. I've basically, you know, I had a mentor tell me like as far as the festivals go, you know, it's they're a really awesome experience. But once like the dust settles, the thing that lasts is like the people and the networking, you know, are the relationships that you made. So really, you know, the festival, I think, is just one of the best places to make relationships and share finally share your work with the world, you know.
All right. Well, speaking about those relationships and sharing your work with the world, I would love for each of you, and this is really for all of the artists who are listening, I would love for each of you to maybe list or talk about the best decision you've made in the past year, whether it be with your work, whether it be personally, but what's the best decision that you've made where you were encouraged about that decision and what it meant for you?
1 year ago, almost today, is when we were walking on the Beltline, my girlfriend and I, Jen, and talking about the fact that I wanted to direct something. And we had been doing narrative shorts for a while at this point, and so I think our minds were kind of in that realm of, okay, well, if you want to direct, what do you want to write something? You know, what are you thinking? And I expressed that I was just really interested in doing a documentary film, and I feel like that's sort of where I align more with what I'd done in my past. And her encouragement to pursue that sort of led us down this road. And so I think for me, it was that. It was that moment of realizing that we don't only have to make narrative films in order to make narrative features, in order to be lifelong filmmakers on the indie side narratively. We can do these really great smaller projects and see where they take us and enjoy that process. And, you know, this could have been, maybe this is the only documentary we make, or maybe this is sort of the first of several that we'll be able to do while we're working on the narrative stuff. And so anyway, for me, that's really important to know that even though you might not think that you're going down a certain way with your creative pursuits, to sort of be open to it and just see where it takes you. Cause it's a year is a long time, and that road can be really interesting along the way.
Yeah, most definitely. You never know what's going to happen. I think it's important to just be, I think the best decision I've made is to just be determined. You know, I feel like the people who get the most success aren't always necessarily the most talented, but they're the people who are the most determined, the people who hit a roadblock and keep going. The people who something happens, you know, and they fall down, but they get back up. A year ago, I was in the runnings for a Fulbright grant with MTV. And I was in the top 8 in the world, I guess. And I was really excited about it and did not get it. Found out in May that I didn't get it. About 2 weeks after I found out, MTV came out with a series that they've had, but it was season 2, I think. It's called Rebel Music, and one of the episodes was in Senegal, featuring like all the people in my documentary who I'd sent them. It was a kind of a crazy coincidence, if that's what you want to call it. But I was really down. It was like a dark time for a second. But, you know, I sort of just picked up, completed, you know, what I had to do. And a year later, you know, a lot of things have changed. So it's just at that time you have to make a decision. You could, like, you know, fall into a dark place and kick yourself in the butt, or you can just keep it moving and keep going towards your goals. So I just feel like just being determined, keep moving toward the goals. Yep.
Babacar Njai and James Martin, our Wonder Root Local Film Series winners. Babacar won the Wonder Film Award, and James won the Audience Choice Award. Babacar, James, let all of our listeners know how they can find out more about what you're working on and how to stay in touch.
Yeah, so James Martin, everything that I am on social media is I am James Martin. The New Orleans Sazerac website is sazerac.doc.com. Sazerac is sazerac.doc.com. And then the hashtag is sazeracdoc, so you can check everything out on Instagram and Twitter and all that.
And you can find me on Facebook. My name is spelled Babacar, B-A-B-A-C-A-R, last name Njai, N-D-I-A-Y-E. And you can find the More Than Music website, which would be morethanmusicthemovie.com.
James, Babacar, thank you for your time.
Thanks, man. It was awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.